We're very fortunate today that he had time from his
very tight schedule to be with us in this class, and he brought his book,
which is, I would say, a very good book. We will use it, those of you who are taking macroeconomics, we'll use it in our macroeconomics class. And Michael, he is a strong believer in private property, in property rights, and rule of law, and voluntary exchange, but it looks like he brought his book for free. So,
yeah.
So that's
yeah, I have copies for everybody here. So, thank you very much. I'm going to give you a basic, what I call reality economics lessons number one and lesson number two. And I'm going to start off by talking about money and get that started. So, I decided to do this presentation for reality economics number one because, to my astoundment, a couple of weeks ago I was listening to a national radio show. And there were two economists being interviewed. And the host asked if either of them would please give a definition of money. And the first one said, well, we really can't define money. And I thought, boy, this guy can't be much of an economist if he can't define money. And yet, it has come to my attention that most people never bother to even think about this very, very basic question. So first, what I'm going to do, if I don't over-caffeinate myself, is talk about money. So money, I'm going to define as a tradable thing. Really simple. It's a tradable thing. Now, it isn't my tie for your hat or your scarf, because that would be barter. And that doesn't really do anything. I mean, my tie and your scarf, we've decided they're worth each other. Okay, so we're going to actually make a trade. But I'm talking about something that actually is in the middle. It's called a medium of exchange, something that we would use more. So it is actually considered valuable by more than just you and me. So it's a tradable thing. Like, for example, in prison, cigarettes or cans of tuna fish can be the tradable thing. And or in other cultures, they've used salt, all kinds of things for money. Right now we use green paper tickets, and we use this pot metal coins and, you know, digits and so on and so forth. I heard somebody say that our green paper tickets are not money, and I invited him to please send me all that he had. And you know, it would be very, very nice if he would, because right now they're money. They're a tradable thing. Now, interestingly, if you go to a casino, those stacks of chips, they're money, but they're only money there. And the coupon that you might find in the newspaper for the grocery store, that's money too, but only for that particular purpose. So our broad definition of money as a tradable thing, we're going to start to whittle down. But first, what I'm going to do is talk about it as a medium of exchange. I'm going to introduce to you two concepts that I think are very important that most people never learn. One is that it is a unit of account. Now, a unit of account basically means what do we call it, and what are we using this, what are we using as a price mechanism? So, if I'm going to do a trade with you, we can decide how we're going to do, we're going to use this, what money we're going to use. We could call it a dollar, or a yen, or a pound, or a euro, or we could use some kind of a weight. And people right now, they say that gold is at $1,700 an ounce. Well, actually, another way of saying the same thing is that the dollar is worth, is actually 1/1700th of an ounce of gold. And so how we actually want to trade, I mean, we could trade using weights and using gold in that particular way. All right. So unit of account is one thing. The other thing is called unit of settlement. Now, this is something that you'll find out if you get into international finance or international trading. Because when different countries actually trade, they decide how they're going to settle their contract. Now,
How many people know that we are the U.S. has the reserve currency of the world? Is this news to anybody? Okay. Does anybody not know what that means? Okay. It's okay. You don't get points off if you don't know. Sorry. Well, back in 1945, the U.S. and Britain primarily met in Bretton Woods in Vermont, or is it New Hampshire, and decided that the U.S. dollar would be the reserve currency of the world. This means that the contracts internationally are actually settled in U.S. dollars. So when OPEC was selling its oil to us, they would only accept U.S. dollars for their oil. And this is very troublesome. And so, for example, if you're China and Japan, and you were actually doing trade, you would first have to exchange your currency to dollars and then make the settlement. It's the unit of settlement. By the way, in December of this past year, China and Japan decided, we're not doing this anymore. And they set up their own exchange directly, and they're going to settle in the yuan. But a contract has to be settled in some kind of currency, some kind of a thing. Could be gold, could be dollars, could be anything. The two entities have to agree. So that unit of settlement. So medium of exchange actually has broad implications for that. All right. So it is also a store of value. Now, when I was listening to these two economists, I kept thinking to myself, they're answering this question the wrong way. Money is easy to define. It's a tradable thing. But what is important to talk about is what is best money, worst money, better money, lesser good money. And so this is where we're going to focus this. The best money is money that is most dependable and most tradable thing. It's most useful. So when you think about money as a thing, think about, well, you know, this cup I can only use to put something in. You know, my tie I can only use to wear. My pen I can only use to write. But money as a thing is something that I can do just about anything with. And as such, it is a most useful thing. It's very, very useful. In fact, in our culture, whatever is money is the most useful thing. That's a very important concept. All right. It's accepted by the widest number of trading partners. It holds value over the longest period of time. It's easily carried. It's easily divisible. Its value is determined by market participants, and it is a secure form of property. Now, this actually goes to the second aspect of money that I want to bring out, which is as a store of value. I brought with me something I'll share with you. You guys can look at later. This is a collection of various different monies. The first one you'll see here is a picture of Saddam Hussein. Back in the early part of the Iraq War, my nephew, who was over there as a captain, emailed me that he and his guys had come across a warehouse where there was a couple billion dollars of these, or a couple billion of these Iraq dinars. He wanted to know what they were worth. I said, nothing. You know, I'm in the commodity business, and one of my traders specializes in currencies. I called him up, and he said, eBay. That's about it. You know, you can't really trade it for anything. Why? Because this money was only good as long as that government existed. It's conditional money. Fiat money is conditional money. And so it doesn't have a very good store of value long term. And so I also have in here for you to look at the Zimbabwe $100 trillion note. And also their $1 note, which is much older, of course. And then their $100 billion note. And you'll notice when you get over here to the $10 million note, it has an expiration date. It says on or before the 30th of June 2008. And I got a second one of these 100 trillions. That's a very interesting aspect of when money dies. They actually put a time deadline on it. And there's multiple countries right now that are doing that. And so it's a very, what does that do? Well, it has implications in terms of spending and so on and so forth. But anyway, that's very interesting. I also have some stamps here from the Weimar German Republic, 1914-1924. If you look closely, what you'll see is that the original stamp is stamped over with a higher denomination. So I don't know German very well. So Soft Pfund, is that 1,000? Yeah. So this 5 mark note was made into 5,000. This 200 mark note was made into 2 million. And so they just declare a different value. And then I have some bus tokens that are out of use from the United States, various places, and some now defunct currency from Turkey. When I first went to Turkey in 2009, I was warned by my travel agent that to exchange all my money before I left because they regularly replace the currency. And so I forgot about it, and I went back the next year, and I couldn't spend these. So I thought, oh, okay, these are now defunct currencies. They're good. In 2009, they're not good anymore. Yeah. And this is a photograph of a friend sent me. Her family in Vermont actually owned a bank, and from 1870, where was this? It was 1879, and this was a $10 note that the bank actually issued. And so individual banks actually issued their own money, and it circulated as money, as a tradable thing at that time. So you guys can look at this. All right. Worst money. Worst money is not dependable or even less than most dependable. In my business, anything that isn't as good for the long haul isn't good. Please. Limited use with limited partners. I mentioned the casino chips or the store coupons. They're very interesting, but they're good as money within that confine, but they're not good at the grocery store for cottage cheese or, you know, you can't get a tank of gas or anything like that. And limited time frame of use, difficult to carry, difficult to divide. For example, in different cultures they've used cows as money. There's an island chain in the South Pacific. They use these gigantic rocks. You can't really move them or divide them, you know, for money. And the value is arbitrarily determined by the central controllers, and it is an insecure form of property. And so money that lasts longest is the best in terms of the store value. So we can talk about this a little bit more, I hope we'll have a couple of questions on that. I kind of embedded a trick question in it, and so hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes. What I'd like to do now is give you reality economics lesson number 2. And this is basic money management in phrases and in a way that I don't think you've heard before. And I'm optimistic that this is going to be valuable to you in your life. I'll pass these out at the end, and then we can also talk about this a little bit more if we have time. How much time do we have, by the way?
This is class until
10:20. Plenty of time. I can't talk that long. So, all right. What I'm going to do is introduce to you a basic economic term that is very important. It's extremely important, the basic economic term. So, nut. Now, how many of you actually are not full-time students? Anybody? Okay. Anybody here have, like, their own apartment and their own car that they have to pay for with an outside job, anything like that? All right. Those are examples of your nut. These are expenses that you have to cover every month regardless. And as you get into the workforce, as you get into life, you're going to find out that this is something that you will say as a slang. It's a common American slang term. Your nut. What is your nut? Well, I'm meeting my nut is another American slang term. And what it means is these are your basic expenses, the stuff you have to do no matter what. Your rent, your food, your mobility, your car. Maybe you're going to consider your iPhone. It's important you know what your nut is, but we'll talk more about that in a minute. What I want to focus on right now is how do you handle your nut? How do you feed it? You feed it by your cash flow. Cash flow is the centerpiece of everything. How many people have heard the term cash is king? Okay. Well, I'm here to tell you cash flow is King Kong. It is the most important thing, and I'm sorry I'm going to do this to you. I'm going to draw my artwork here. King Kong.
Every month, you have to meet it. This is what handles this.
How do you handle, how do you create a cash flow?
You can create it three different ways. You can create it from being an employee. You can create it by having a business, being an entrepreneur, or you can create it by investments. We'll talk about these separate.
These can create cash flow.
All right.
Now, the next most important term I want to introduce to you is savings.
Savings is commonly what you think of as what you have left over after your nut. And this is a very, very important concept. In the United States today, we are one of the lowest savings people on the planet. Up until 10 years ago, our per capita savings rate for our households was negative. Every household in the United States, on average, was spending more than it was bringing in. By contrast, in China, the per capita household savings rate is 25%. In India, it's 30%. How do they do that? How they do that is that they keep their net small and they keep their cash flow healthy. Now, why is this such an important thing? I'm going to talk more about this in a minute. I'll just tell you this. Your savings is the key to your future flexibility. It allows you many options that you don't have if you that you otherwise would not have. Now, here's the interesting thing. When your cash flow gets interrupted, your nut continues. And how are you going to handle your nut if you don't have your cash flow, if it gets interrupted in some way? Well, you're going to have to dig into your pocket, go into your savings. And if that happens, then you're introducing a new concept, a new economic concept. And that new economic concept is called burn rate. Burn rate is a very, very important concept. It means how fast are you burning through the money that you have. Now, you might think I made this term up, but I didn't. This is an actual term that is used by mining companies in their prospecti. You know, if you go and look at a mining company's prospectus, they will tell you how much cash they have on hand and what their burn rate is. And prospective investors want to know that. Very important. I'm telling you, most people have no idea what their burn rate is. And they don't have any idea. Basically, the reason is they have no idea really what their nut is. And so, but what you really have to become aware of is that if cash flow becomes interrupted, nut continues, is fed by savings at the rate at which this needs to draw from that. That's going to happen. Now, there is an option. And that option is called credit, because you can actually get another way to create new money into your life. And in our life here, commonly, you're going to see credit card, or if you get a business, you're going to see a credit line. And actually, they can actually create a nice thing about into your cash flow. But what are they really doing? Here's the key thing you should know about credit. Credit time shifts. It time shifts to now from your future. It time shifts to now. It gives it to you now, but it's going to take from you from your future. It encumbers your future flexibility. This adds to your future flexibility. This diminishes your future flexibility because this is a two-headed monster. When you do this, you are creating debt. And I successfully went through this one too. All right. So, debt. Oh, golly gosh. That was some good news. So we're going to red. I wanted to use red for emphasis, but I can't do it.
Sorry.
All right, so, well, that's kind of cool. We'll do it this way. Debt. All right, well, when I was drawing this up as a picture, I envisioned this, and you're going to appreciate my fabulous artistry. I had a smiley face over here for credit, and I had a sad face for debt.
Of course, my wife and my secretary just laughed at my art.
So my secretary found me a really, really good one. And I've got it here. It's kind of a really nice cross between the two faces here.
But it is a two-faced monster. And it isn't that it's bad inherently. It's very handy. This part is very handy, and it's very useful. This part is dangerous, and you have to approach with caution. But like any other tool, whether it's fire or a sharp knife, if it's used properly, it's okay. It's just you have to know how to use it.
So it's not something you should be afraid of inherently and avoid at all costs. You just need to be very aware that it can actually be a drag on you and can really hurt you. And how is that? How is it that it can do that? I'll tell you, here's the key. If you ever confuse this with cash flow, that's really bad. Now, I don't normally like to go into too much detail about my personal life, but back in the 80s, I twice tried to start businesses using my credit cards. I made the mistake of thinking that my credit card in line was the same thing as cash flow. And it didn't work in both cases. So what did I do? I created this gigantic nut for myself, this obligation, because I had no savings. And I was desperately trying to create the cash flow to cover this really ugly situation. Well, my personal story is I didn't declare bankruptcy. I dug my way out, but I lived like near pauperdom because I had to keep my nuts so small, even though my amount of money I had to create every month was large. And what did that do? It restricted my future. It made me really, it encumbered my future. It didn't allow me to do in the future what I wanted to do because I had to handle and pay for this thing. So this is a very important life lesson to look at. All right, so what I want to do is just very briefly go over these definitions one more time, then the lessons, and then I can just open the floor for conversation if you'd like. So, number one, nut must be made. It is your choice to keep it small and or to make it large. And sometimes life is going to foist it on you. You start having kids, your nut's going to get big, let me tell you. You know, all of a sudden, you've got a lot of things to deal with because you can't help it. You know, that's the way it's going to be. Cash flow is King Kong, and it's the number one priority to handle your nut and your savings. Savings is key in importance next to cash flow. How much depends on your nut and your cash flow. Now, I just want to make a comment here. None of you really have a nut that you have to cover based on your generation of cash flow right now. So I want to infuse into your heads this notion of how much you should actually save. And I'm going to be putting down the controversial number here of 50%. Now, I say controversial number because if you ask a financial planner, they're going to say 10, 15%, something like that. Well, what happened for me is that when I was living off my credit line and I had this gigantic amount of obligation that I had to cover, and I was covering it, as soon as I had it covered, I shifted all of that money into savings. And inside of about 7 years, I paid off my house. 2 years later, I paid off my office building. And it then started getting into more productive other uses. But the point is this, is that the more you save, the more you have flexibility in your life.
And if you get that mantra into your head early in your life, it can really serve you. And I really genuinely think you should do that. The Chinese people have done it, 25%. Indian people, on average, 30%. Highest in the world. And so there's that. All right. So burn rate is the rate at which the nut consumes the savings. You can't avoid that if cash flow gets interrupted. You need to know if your burn rate is high or low. And credit is important and handy. It time shifts. It's a key term. Time shifts to now from your future. Always remember this. And debt burdens your future cash flow and increases nut, and therefore is dangerous and should be used cautiously. All right. So here are the lessons. Number one about nut. It must be made. It's dependent on cash flow. And for you, you need to know its components, and you should prioritize them. It doesn't mean you need to go make a whiteboard and say, okay, well, here are all the different elements. You can. It might be useful to you. But you need to know that if your cash flow gets restricted, how are you going to give up your iPhone, your car, that extra meal that you're so used to having? What is it? Are you going to move to a smaller house? I mean, I have a buddy. He started a business. And as soon as he started a business, he sold his house and moved into a trailer. He cut his net down to the bone. And so you have to be aware that this is a part of your financial life, and it is going to be there. All right. If cash flow is interrupted and the nut cannot be met, the burn rate continues, what are you going to do? Not that you should plan it all out ahead of time, but you should definitely not be ignorant of it. You're going to have to do something. Have it in your awareness in some way. The way that I suggest that you deal with it and think and is to actually nurture and expand your sources of revenue. For most people, it's either being an employee or a business. And we can talk more about that. I'd like to talk more about how you can actually improve yourself as an employee and as a business owner. There's a very interesting concept that I'll just mention, hours versus streams, as in stream you would fish in. And we can talk more about that in a minute. That'd be lesson number three. And then, burn rate continues, but you can maybe shrink the net. How to handle. Savings is tapped. Bad, but okay. Credit line is used as substitute for cash flow. Bad, bad. So, what I like to say is that if you have to tap your savings to handle your nut, that's bad. But it's okay. Meaning, rainy days happen. You know, I had a water main break a couple of weeks ago, coming to my house. It was on my side, which means I had to pay it. So there's $1,500, boom, I wasn't expecting to have to pay. Well, I had the savings, so I could handle it. It's bad, but it's okay, right? Now, the other way to handle it is by credit line. That's what I call bad, bad. Bad, bad. I don't want to put it on my credit card or go to the bank and say, hey, I got to fix my credit, not know how I'm going to pay it off. That's bad, bad. Because that encumbers your future more. Now I've time shifted this obligation. Okay. Savings is vital. Is the foundation of all future flexibility, and you can count the ways. Buying a new home, starting a business, or for your personal life. You want to go on a vacation. You want to go, move someplace, whatever. It is the foundation of all your future flexibility. Credit line is important, but only if cash flow is stable. And that's a very, very important concept. People maybe are aware that we are in an inflationary economy. Prices of things start to tend to go up, and they have been tending to go up. And people have said to me, oh, well, in an inflationary economy where the dollar is worth less as time goes on, wouldn't it make sense to get into debt and then pay it back in cheaper dollars? I say, sure, makes a ton of sense, provided you have stable cash flow. Again, cash flow,
Cash flow is king. King come.
It's the most important part of the whole thing. And never confuse credit line with cash flow. That's what I wanted to tell you this morning. Thank you.
Questions to Michael? I think that's very interesting and provocative.
Yeah.
Do you think that a business that relies on credit or liabilities is less effective than, say, a business like Chipotle that tries to pay everything with cash?
Well, that's a really great question. If you talk to bankers, and I didn't bring up the whole thing about bankers into this whole thing, because they're over here, and you think I'm a bad artist for here's a bank. You know, I'd like to do the Roman column thing, you know, but that's about as good as I get with it. That's the bank.
They will tell you not to be afraid of debt if you're a business owner, and you shouldn't. In the same way as if you're in a kitchen, you shouldn't be afraid of a sharp knife or fire, but you better be aware of how it cuts, you know, and how it works. And don't make the mistake that a lot of people make on it. Now, I personally have the philosophy of cash and carry because of my earlier bad experience with credit. I use it very judiciously. I use it to time shift. I make major purchases with it, you know, but then I try to negotiate terms that are really cool. I bought a truck a few years ago from Toyota, almost 5.5 years ago, zero down. Zero interest rate. What's the problem? You know, I got stable cash flow. I'll just, you know, do that. That was easy. Businesses, they tend to confuse this credit line and cash flow. So I'll give you an example of how it can be abused. How many of you have heard of MF Global? MF Global was the largest, one of the largest commodity firms in the world, and in October 31st of November of 2011, right in that window of November 1st, last year it went bankrupt. Now, how did it go bankrupt? It went bankrupt because started making these bets, these very elaborate derivative bets. And in order to feed the debt, or to feed the bets, he took out credit lines, big ones, giant ones, multi-billion dollar ones, so big that when the whole deal went away and started going sour, and by the way, the market didn't move against him. That's a funny little nuance of this story. One of the idiosyncrasies of the whole deal is called the margin money, the money that you have to put up as collateral. That went up. And so he had to come up with some extra dough in a hurry. Couldn't get it. All of his sources of credit, they suddenly dried up. And in a matter of a few days, that company was out of business. Hundreds and hundreds of people were, thousands of people were affected. But hundreds and hundreds of people were devastated financially as a result of it. It's a huge, huge problem. There are many, many stories of this. And so businesses often will expand based on, smiley over here.
Here, let's do a little smiley face. Here, please, take our money. You've got good cash flow. No problem. Like that.
And then they expand, and there's so many stories I can't even tell you. There's guys who started limousine services. Their business is going well. Interest rates, though, and this gets into the whole thing of central banks,
and now we're going to start talking about another concept called the
Austrian business cycle theory, and that's a very interesting thing to introduce to you. I'm going to leave that expanded concept in more competent hands, though.
Central banks, like ours, our Fed, they artificially affect the price of money, or declare the price of money. And they say, okay, it's 1%.
That's what money is. That's That's what money is worth, to lend money. And then they lend it to banks, and then the banks then in turn lend it to other people. Now, banks stand in the middle, they make a little extra money out of it, they maybe charge 4% or 3%, but they go to this credit line, and the business owner, to your question, says, you know, that money's kind of cheap, like me with my truck, you know? Zero, I can handle that. You know, 3%, I can handle that. Like that. Well, and what they do is they start to expand their businesses. And I've seen it happen with wineries, limousine services, all kinds of different businesses. They get suckered in on the drug of cheap money. And they make the mistake that the credit line is the cash flow. That's the kicker. And they depend on it. They need to draw on that line, that next round. Maybe their sales starts to go down. But what has happened? Their nut has increased. They've increased their nut. And because they've increased their nut, they're in a corner they can't get out of. And so what do they start to do? They start to diminish the things that are in their nut. They fire employees. They sell assets. How many people heard that Sharp, you know, the electronic firm, they basically are going bankrupt right now? Panasonic, Sony, their debt just got reduced to junk. These are icons that they way over expanded into the plasma markets, and now they can't cover it because the market has decided that it isn't going to pay for it. I bought in 2007 from Pioneer a beautiful 60-inch, you know, TV, and I had it marked down from $6,000 to $5,500 at that time. Well, you buy the same thing for $2,000 now. Well, Pioneer had some really cool extra electronics that it said, you know what, we're worth it. We're not going to reduce our margins. We're not going to compromise. They're out of business. Panasonic bought their technology and shelved it because nobody's willing to pay for it. When you look at, I went into Best Buy to see, because it, you know, I was thinking of getting another TV for another facility. They're not as good. I mean, I can see the hairs in the pores of people on this thing. It's so outrageously great, this technology. So what? You know, there's a few people that'll buy it, like crazy me, but there isn't enough to make it really work. Pioneer went out of business rather than change its model. But your nut is part of your model. You know, it's your business model. And so you have to decide, am I going to cut employees? Like Citibank just announced yesterday, 11,000 cuts are coming. 11,000 people without jobs. And or they're going to close facilities and so on and so forth. What winds up happening is that there's kind of a flow of money. And the Austrian business cycle theory, in a nutshell, is all about this mistake of credit being confused with cash flow. That's what it's really all about. And that explains why businesses en masse go out of business. That's why we have these massive recessions. Doug French, who is the former president of the Mises Institute, I did a radio show on it. By the way, I'm going to give you my book. I run a little website. It's called Radio Free Market. And we have over 100 shows of I used to do it every week. It's more of a blog now, but we still have archived over 100 shows, several with Yuri, and I highly recommend them. Anyway, Doug French, he's a former banker, and we did one that Doug made this very, very profound statement. He said, it isn't the bust that everybody should be focusing on, but the boom. It's of the boom and bust cycle. You got to understand how the boom gets artificially created. Once you understand that, then you can see that the bust is just naturally going to follow. And so that's why, commensurately, we're into sound money, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
And my interest in presenting this to you guys today is that, I lived the majority of my adult life in fear because of money. It's only really in the last, I'd say, 10, 11, 12 years that I've finally gotten to a place of, okay, I understand it, I know what to do, I'm okay. But I have a nephew who's now 38, 4 kids, has a business, his wife has a business, and I started teaching him this stuff, trying to dig myself out of my debt hole. And actually, it was more than 25 years ago, because he was littler. And he just told me recently that he's a couple of years away from owning his house outright. He's got money in the bank. He's expanding his business. He owns a bail bonds agency in Detroit. And now he's expanded all over the state of Michigan. And now he's thinking about buying another business. And this goes into business stuff more. I can talk more about businesses. I love talking about this as it applies to business. I'm presenting this to you initially as people, just individuals, because you are the foundation of any business that you're going to be. You're going to face these facts. These are not controversial. You will face these. The only thing controversial on this board that I can think of is this here, and whether or not you want to make it 25 or 75 or 10 or ignore it. That's up to you. I was told by more than one adult that 50% is crazy. It's not crazy. I did it. A lot of people did that. So, did I address your question?
Yeah.
Okay. There was another one I think I saw when you started asking yours.
I'm also thinking that we have a wonderful friend. I hope you know John Popola.
Yes.
John Popolo, he is a wonderful filmmaker, mm-hmm. and he works in Hollywood, and he made a wonderful economics video, Fear of the Boom and Bust.
Right.
And we have exactly...
Oh, you got time. It. Can you show it?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
We'll show that.
Yeah, that's
great. That would be really interesting.
Excellent.
You know, it's the best explanation of Austrian School of Economics, of Austrian economics, because what Michael was telling us, that if you really confuse cash flow with credit line, then you're making decisions which otherwise you wouldn't make. And these decisions, they create a bubble. And that's why we have booms and busts. That bad decisions because money is cheap. Cheaper than they would be otherwise. And so this is the problem with the central bank.